with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
Good evening, everybody, or good late afternoon for those of you who are joining me on the West Coast or wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, helping you find your courage to reclaim that which has always been in you and that which you have always been and are. Very delighted to be with you here tonight and every other Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And these broadcasts have always been dedicated to the integration of our spirituality and our mental health. I am Dr. James Houck, and if you would like more information about me, or if you just want to leave me your comments about tonight's show, I invite you to visit that website. It's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity, or my personal website is www.reclaiming-authenticity.com. And if you want to call in a little later, in the show, that number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after the break. And just a reminder that these broadcasts are podcasted in case you want to go back and listen again, or you can go back into the archives and listen to previous shows. And I'm just always delighted to announce that these shows are available for download on iTunes, Audible, Amazon Music, Spotify, and as well as this show also replays on WNEW 102.7 FM HD3 out of New York on the weekends. Now, as I previously said, that these broadcasts have always focused on the continued integration of our spirituality and our mental health, all within the context of our relationships. The relationship that we have with ourselves, the relationship that we have with others, and certainly our relationship that we have with God or the divine. And this integration of our spirituality and our mental health is very essential because at any given moment, you know, our minds interpret what we take in through our senses. And based on our previous experiences and education levels and upbringing and so forth, oftentimes our mind's interpretation fail to capture a more accurate understanding of deeper lessons, perceived realities, and greater truths. And the reason for this is that our egos, which are very self-centered and very limited, well, our egos come in, they want to take over, and they keep us from knowing ourselves as vast and eternal souls, as well as what needs to heal, so that we can live in forgiveness, gratitude, bliss, and love, and knowing ourselves as that eternal soul. Now, admittedly, it is our egos that lead us astray with all kinds of thoughts and selfish pursuits, a lower level consciousness, if you will, which is always bound by time and space and causation. And yet, we also need to pay attention to our egos by asking ourselves in any given situation, is there something in me which has created this distortion, you know, of a perception or this reaction? Okay. So we can better understand where our healing and transformation are still needed. You know, where in us do we still need to work on ourselves? Let's just say. And this is the reason why the integration of our spirituality and our mental health is vital for our awareness of who we are as souls. And, you know, here's just a quick example that I've been sharing the last couple of broadcasts, that there is a huge difference between worldly love, which is perhaps far more familiar to us, and godly or divine love, which is unconditional. Now, according to my teacher and dear friend, we often use the term, I love you. But such love is conditional because it's temporary and changes as it goes back and forth of conflicting emotions of the mind, such as whenever envy comes in or jealousy and especially hatred. I mean, you just simply can't say, I love you, and you hate the person. It just doesn't work. Or, you know, well, I'm just a jealous person because my love is so great. And like, jealousy has no room when it comes to unconditional love. You know, that's ego talking. Okay, that's how subtle it is. And yet, godly love or divine love is that love that's not entangled in our human emotions, especially human emotions of the mind. You know, divine love is eternal, and it's not conditional, and actually helps us to purify our minds by recognizing only that which is divine in all. It gives us a little bit of discernment, okay, by understanding exactly what is unconditional, divine, or godly love. Okay? And this is what reclaiming authenticity is really all about. You know, it can be summed up in one word. Everybody say it with me now. I've been saying it for 5 years. Namaste. Roughly translated, because I see myself as a soul of light, this allows me to greet your lighted soul of who you are, even if you have yet to see it in yourself. It's important that I see you as a soul of light, because I see myself as a soul of light. And for everybody else out there, when we see ourselves as that lighted soul, we can certainly see others as that soul of light. Okay. Well, I'll be taking your calls in a little while, like I said, because I really want to hear from you on tonight's subject. Living from your highest self, remembering who you are. Well, I trust your season of autumn is going well, and here we are in the throes of baseball playoffs, and I have to say, with me being on the East Coast and living right outside Philadelphia, yes, I am a Phillies fan, and I know the Phillies are in Los Angeles tonight. I think their game just got underway, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here, and I know, yes, that the Dodgers are up 2-0 and they can close it out tonight. I understand all that, but I'm still a Phillies fan. Okay. So I'm going to be rooting for the hometown there, as well as I expect you people living out in the Los Angeles area and parts of California to be rooting for those Dodgers. So we'll see. Okay. But I've always said it's going to be one of those two teams that are definitely going to go on and win the World Series. It's just, you know, you got two strong teams there. Well, let's get underway, shall we? Just here, let's a quick question. Let's just start things off with that. You know, how many of us have ever gone through some sort of transition in our lives? I mean, how many of us have ever gone through some sort of transition? Yeah, I mean, we all have, okay? And the only thing constant in our lives is change. You know, whether we recognize it or not, we are changing. Okay, and whether we're ready for that change or not, change happens on many different levels. It happens mentally, emotionally, physically, even spiritually. Now, we may not have all had similar experiences in our transitions, let's just say, but we all have gone through various transitions in our lives, you know, just by simply getting older and facing new challenges throughout our lifespan. And maybe we face challenges such as graduations or changes in jobs or careers or promotions or getting fired or being laid off and so forth, or maybe moving from one place to another because of a job or school, or it's time to move, whatever that might be. And maybe we've had transitions from being single to being married and or having a life partner. And we've also faced transitions of having to say goodbye to a loved one upon their death, and so on and so on and so on. You know, and life is just filled with one change after another, one transition after another. And you know, whenever we go through these transitions, we often find ourselves in kind of a limbo or a liminal space in which there may be a great deal of anxiety or uncertainty. And especially, what do we do with the unfamiliar? And as a result, many people just might prefer to remain where they are, you know, unchallenged with the familiar, even if it means continuing in, you know, present day suffering or misery and pain. Now, a basic definition of a liminal space that I prefer is literally the time between what was and the next. It is a place of transition. It's a place of waiting, and often includes a time of not knowing. Because you see, these thresholds of waiting and not knowing are next, whatever next is, are everywhere in life. And they are actually inevitable. Because each liminal space ushers in a new chapter in our lives and holds various degrees of disruption and uncertainty. And I think that's what people fear the most about going through liminal space or liminal time. You know, it's this disruption or uncertainty. And I like things nice and predictable and, you know, just the way things are. And that's not how life operates. Well, basically, liminality and liminal space both take this concept of a new beginning. And they apply it to times of transition and ambiguity and simply waiting. But in spiritual terms, liminal space becomes a time of embracing, you know, an opportunity for growth and learning and spiritual transformation. Because whenever we adopt this perspective, we no longer need to fear the liminal spaces in our lives, but see them as opportunities to remove the superimpositions of illusions or old patterns of negative thinking and opportunities to tap into our highest selves, to embrace ourselves for who we truly are. So let's think about it this way here. Suppose we had never been in a liminal space. Okay, well, we would stop growing and we would stop being challenged, and thus we would stop developing into our fullest potential. One of my favorite Trappist monks, you know, Thomas Merton, he lived during the early to mid 1900s. He wrote such books as The Seven Story Mountain and New Seeds of Contemplation. And that's where I first just fell in love with Thomas Merton, you know, just the contemplative prayer. You know, it's just, I was hooked. You know, it's like, that's what I want. I just want that introspection, that contemplation. But in another book entitled Thoughts in Solitude, Merton writes that perhaps his most famous saying regarding the uncertainty of being in a liminal space, as well as the resiliency that he needed to remain true to his calling. And he writes, "My Lord God, I have no idea where I am going, because I do not see the road ahead of me. I cannot know for certain where it will end, nor do I really know myself. And the fact that I think I'm following your will doesn't mean that I'm actually doing so. But I believe that the desire to please you does, in fact, please you. And I hope I have that desire in all that I am doing. I hope that I will never do anything apart from that desire. And I know that if I do this, you will lead me by the right road, though I may know nothing about it. Therefore, I will always trust you, though I may seem to be lost and in the shadows of death. I will not fear, for you are ever with me, and you will never leave me to face my perils alone." It's just beautiful writing, and the rest of the book is that way. So if you've never read Thoughts in Solitude, treat yourself to that. Okay. Well, again, let's keep in mind that a liminal space is the time between the what was and the next. You know, yes, it is a place of transition. It's waiting and simply not knowing. but there is also an opportunity to change for the better. And if there ever was a time when people display a sense of directionlessness or anxiety-driven or disruption or a lack of sense of purpose and direction in life, it is within the contemporary times in which we live. And despite the age-old wisdom that material things do not satisfy or guaranteed happiness, society nevertheless plunges headfirst into this pit of despair and emptiness and pain, often looking for peace and gratitude and love in all the wrong places. Because you see, from my perspective as a clinical and trauma therapist, it appears that not only are people uncomfortable with uncertainty, but also they're not taught how to live in uncertain times. Because yes, a pattern emerges as we seem to move from one liminal space to another. And it's kind of interesting that originating from the Latin word limens, being in a liminal space means to lose everything that you have come to trust. You lose everything that you've come to understand and you know, and uncertainty about what to do next. It's almost as if you're standing at a threshold and feeling as though you are at an in-between state. And that could be downright comfortable, uncomfortable, I should say. Okay. And when many people that find themselves in a state of uncertainty or which way they do not know where to go, I often tell people that this place is a very good place to be in. And sometimes they look at me crazy, or sometimes they're just like, what? It is. Because we are searching. We are open. We are looking for direction. And although everything in us may resist this or hate it or whatever, it is nonetheless a place where we need to be. You know, a place or state that no longer serves us keeps us from growing. And unfortunately, we may, you know, misunderstand this state or this place that we find ourselves in, because we may ask ourselves, okay, what did I do wrong? Or did I take a wrong turn? Did I misunderstand something along the way? Well, let's look at it this way. Perhaps you've done everything right. And the answer might be you have simply outgrown the previous places, or you've outgrown the old ways of looking at things. And perhaps everything that has happened in your life, the decisions made, the sacrifices, the mistakes, the joys, the celebrations, and so forth, have brought you to this very exact moment. Think about that. I mean, every decision you've made brought you to even this moment. That's why it's impossible, you know, to whenever you want to play a party game and like, would you, you know, for $1 million, would you go back and do it all over again? Nope, not me. I do not want to do that, because my life would have turned out completely different. I probably wouldn't have attended the schools that I have. I probably wouldn't have met the people I had. I definitely wouldn't have met my wife. I definitely wouldn't have had my children, grandchild, so on and so forth. So everything, even the mistakes or the life lessons that I have learned from those mistakes, every decision has brought me to this very moment. And every decision that you have made has brought you to this very moment. But you know, when we can fully understand this about ourselves, you know, I think it's easier then to live in gratitude, especially during the most troubling times in our lives. You know, for example, trauma is not a catastrophic event, but rather trauma is an after effect of a perceived or real life-threatening situation. And it measures our ability to be able to survive and thrive in everyday life. And the well-known researcher and author Bessel van der Kolk categorizes trauma into two different little categories, one of big T traumas and the other little t traumas. Now, he defines big T traumas as, our experiences that, such as war or life-threatening illnesses, violence, physical, sexual, and/or emotional abuse, natural disasters, so on and so forth. Those are big T traumas. And with such experiences, there is an element of vulnerability to our personal safety and our emotional well-being. On the other hand, little T traumas, as he defines, falls into this category of everyday or transitional experiences, such as, let's just say, being promoted or fired at work, or moving to another city, beginning or finishing school, or changes in the family, or getting married, so on and so forth. I mean, lots and lots and lots of little liminal spaces that we go through. And even though there's no element of threat to our personal safety, little T traumas have the potential to be just as overwhelming as big T traumas, especially if unresolved traumatic life issues have been accumulating over time or handed down through the generations. Now, from a psycho-spiritual viewpoint, there is a huge difference between big T trauma that results from, let's say, natural disasters like fires and floods and earthquakes and so forth, versus experiences that have the potential to produce characteristics of both big T and little T trauma simultaneously. I mean, such experiences would include a direct physical, emotional, psychological, and spiritual harm that is the result of the malicious intent of others. So, a good example would be with, hate crimes and genocide. There are also components of justice and accountability. Because when people are responsible for inflicting harm against others and they are not held accountable, or systems that continue to oppress people are not corrected, traumatized people are more likely to collapse from the additional layers of internalized little t traumas, such as humiliation or disgrace, self-loathing, shame, ridicule, and so forth. One thing about trauma is that it can be layered and layered and layered. And what makes matters worse is that these physical, emotional, and spiritual wounds often remain infected and toxic when others are suffering similar pain and exploitation. In fact, when such atrocities, suffering, and oppression continue to be met with the silent indifference or willful disregard, societies tend to become numb to the fact that they encourage convenient justification of oppressive symptoms, generation after generation after generation after generation. So, in other words, when crimes against humanity are left unchecked, they not only serve to further cement trauma, but also send a dangerous message to other societies that such crimes can be committed in the future without any consequence. But ironically, there is potential, in that the crimes against humanity can produce a trauma which not only stains the soul, but also blinds future generations with the emotional, psychological, physical, and spiritual baggage of the past. And yet, what effect does trauma have on us as souls? I mean, most of the time we talk about the symptoms of grief and trauma in the language of physical or emotional terms. And furthermore, if the spiritual component is explored in terms of rebuilding faith and philosophical beliefs that are challenged by a loss or challenged by trauma, remembering that we are souls first and foremost often gets lost or unfortunately buried in religious language. Not always the case, but the potential is there. Because you see, on one hand, it is good to alleviate symptoms. I'll be the first one to say, absolutely, let's get out of our pain. It's good to alleviate symptoms, as the majority of people that I work with, say how they just want to feel better, or they want to eat better, or they want to sleep better, or they want to be in healthier relationships. They just don't know how to do that yet because they're still acting out of their wounds. And yet, on the other hand, What if, okay, just what if we embrace ourselves as soul and begin to transform the energy of our traumatic experiences through the voice of the soul? And this is where things get a little interesting, because to understand ourselves as soul, we have to first suspend our logical and linear thinking. Because ever since the age of enlightenment, you know, we've been trained to verify our experiences through our senses. You know, how much does something weigh? What does it look like? Is the behavior predictable? Can we place its role in our finite human understanding? And so forth. And yet, our souls do not play by these rules. Our souls can never be grasped from a linear understanding of the mind. Never has, and it never will be. But still, those who are looking for empirical evidence of the soul believe that unless the soul can be verified by this temporal template, the soul then doesn't exist. And that's just not true. In fact, there is something to be said for the subjective nature of reality. And that carries with it a lot of strength, because there are some things that the scientific method cannot explain. And there are some things that the subjective cannot explain. But we need the language of both. We need to have the communication of both. But in terms of the soul, scientific method just cannot go there. It's limited. So, you know, another important aspect when it comes to understanding trauma's effect on a soul is that a person's soul is eternal, with no beginning, no end. The soul is the only thing that lives on after our physical hearts stop beating and our brain waves cease. The soul lives and has always existed eternally in other dimensions and timelessness, in a location we are told that is heaven, you know, where the fullness of God exists in an unfathomable glory, majesty, and splendor. Whatever that looks like, I just know it's just going to be like, oh, you know, we just can't describe it. We just don't have enough words in the human language to be able to touch it. And, you know, just a side thought here. You know, there are close to over 100 scriptural references in the Bible indicating that God knows us eternally. I mean, that is plain and clear. And one of my favorite passages comes from the very first chapter of the book of Jeremiah. You know, and Jeremiah was a prophet called of God. And when God taps him on the shoulder and says, yeah, I want you to be, you know, a prophet, and I want you to go speak to the people to turn, have them turn around and repent and come back to me, Jeremiah actually puts up an argument. I mean, can you believe it? Jeremiah argues with God, and he goes, you need to find somebody else, God. I just don't speak that well. I'm only a child, you know, and so on and so forth. And God comes back without flinching, okay? And God says to Jeremiah, look, before you were born, I knew you. And before you were born, I already consecrated you, and I set you apart to be a prophet unto the nations. What in the world did that look like? You know, before we were born, God knew us. God knows us. What does the soul look like? We don't know. Because all we know is, you know, the body. But yet, we're not the body. There's so much more to us than the body. You know, we are a soul. And whatever that looks like, I'm glad God knows us as a soul, first and foremost. Well, I would really love to hear what's on your heart about the liminal spaces that you've been in. So again, if you want to call in, I'd be so glad to talk to you. That number is 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after this break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck, and I will be back with you in 1 minute. right. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. And I just want to say just a brief word about the next broadcast of Reclaiming Authenticity, which is scheduled for Wednesday, October 22nd at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on BBS Radio. That show is entitled Vaya con Dios. Right? And as I little background story on this, that I started, you know, become more aware of soul consciousness at an early age. I had no idea that's what you called it. I just like, oh, this is cool. You know, doesn't everybody experience this? But as I became more aware of the soul consciousness at just, you know, being very young, I began to hear the cries of the wounded in very distinct ways. You know, such as muffled cries and sobs in various states of consciousness. I didn't even know where that was coming from. I just knew I was incredibly sad because I was picking up on something that, doesn't everybody hear this? You know, but again, this awareness, I believe, was not by accident. Because, you know, my Native American Indian teacher, who pointed out my cut finger in his blood and ancestors lesson to me one day, he wakened me further on this journey to release souls that had been trapped by mental and emotional trauma. Now, to accomplish this, it was no longer sufficient for me to simply hear their cries. But as I went on, I realized it was time for me to visit these physical places that witnessed, you know, the crimes against humanity. It was now time to transform the traumatic energies and heal the land and release these souls back to God. It's just something about, you know, whenever blood is shed in the ground and it soaks in, that energy that was, you know, the negative energy that was shed in whatever horrific act, you know, holds that energy until it's released or until it's transformed. So put a mark on a reminder on your phone for the next Reclaiming Authenticity broadcast right here, BBS Radio, Wednesday, October 22nd at 9 p.m. Well, earlier in the broadcast, I was talking about big T traumas, which indicate major life upheavals in our lives, okay? You know, and these are life-threatening, okay? That's why they're big T traumas. Now, little T traumas, which we go through all the time, you know, it's just because of the transitions in our lives. And we need to pay attention to these little T traumas because they not only have the potential to build up over time if we don't grieve them and learn from them, but also pull us into a liminal space of a place of transition, a place of waiting, and often include a time of not knowing, because we live in a three-dimensional world, a three-dimensional world governed by time and space and structures and form. We live in a chronological order of linear time consisting of past, present, future that is experienced through our five senses of sight, sound, touch, smell, and taste. And we're often pulled in the direction of our opposites, such as how we are loved or how we have not loved, what we have or what do we not have, how we connect or how we disconnect, and are we good or are we bad? You know, when we perceive things as people, you know, as good or bad or right or wrong, black and white, all in all, that's duality. But what if we can imagine that as eternal souls, okay, follow me here now, that we actually exist in higher dimensions, often operating outside of time and space. And that's how we see ourselves as connected to all people, places, and things. See, there's a realization that we don't live in duality. We're just not aware of the connectedness, of the oneness that we are already in. I mean, how different would our lives be if we understood and behaved in oneness? How different would our lives be if we fully understood that everything that comes from us affects us? Okay, or I love to explain this to kids of like, we live in an echo. You know, it's like we live in a tunnel. We send something out through our voice and it's going to come back to us. So everything we send out is going to come back to us exactly as it went from us. That is, we, you know, another example is as we wound one another, we keep ourselves wounded. But as we heal one another through forgiveness, gratitude, and love, we heal ourselves. I heard a great quote the other day. It really made sense to me. I actually had to like go back and read it again, you know, and the person raised the question of why, in terms of social media, are we settling for misinformation or propaganda, emotional dysfunction, and polarization? And instead of passively relying on artificial intelligence, let's just say, we have the capacity, this realization that we have the capacity to live in higher or ascension intelligence. We have the capacity to be able to live in higher intelligence. In fact, we can take an active role in creating the world in which we live by learning to raise our vibrational awareness above the noise and negativity the world spews out every day. But how do we do this? Well, let's circle back and let's begin again by understanding the illusion of duality. Okay, duality, or seeing myself separate from others, is actually a superimposed state of being or limited perception. And perhaps we often want to connect with God on this lower level of awareness. And you know, and that's fine. Okay. One thing that scripture frequently emphasizes is that God is more than happy to meet us where we are. But, and this is where we need to fasten our seatbelts, I guarantee you that is not God's ultimate desire for us to remain there. Because there is so much more for us to realize about God and the universe, and especially ourselves. So in other words, we ain't seen nothing yet. My teacher, Swami Paramananda in India, taught me that we must understand ourselves first. And only then, you know, can we understand that we are eternal souls. You know, in self-realization, not self-actualizing, but in self-realization, we need to know that we are always without birth and death. We are everywhere. And then afterwards, only can we understand that we are all and all are in us as souls. So it's this understanding of oneness, you know, and who am I connected to? Who are we not connected to? Okay, so duality, when we have like a this or that or black and white, or it's, you know, it's that or something else, or we're different from other people, that's just not true. You know, it's a very limited understanding. But what if we would understand each other, not in terms of, you know, this duality, you know, it's us versus them or whatever, them versus us, but rather we are connected. Yes, we are all part of the human race, but in the grand scheme of things, we're all souls. But how do we live that out on this earth? I mean, that's where diversity comes in. Not duality, diversity. And that needs to be celebrated. That needs to be celebrated instead of feared. Well, you know, the first step in raising our awareness to remembering who we truly are is understanding, first and foremost, we're not the body. Rather, we are souls within the body. As I mentioned before the break, you know, God's conversation with Jeremiah in the Bible, God knew us before we were born and knows everything about us. And yet, we have to realize these things in ourselves. To see ourselves as souls living in the world, to see ourselves as God sees us. And this is more in line with who we truly are. And that is a very courageous question to ask God. Help me see me and others as you see me and others. And this may be especially difficult for us to grasp at first, because no matter how high our spiritual awareness or spiritual attunement becomes, we still have to contend with the physical form that gets hungry. And we have to contend with illnesses and diseases, and we have to contend with pain. And we also have to contend with the fact that we need to bathe. In fact, there's still a lot of work for us to be done, and food to grow and distributed and prepared and enjoyed. Okay? Medicine needs to be developed, and people need to be educated and trained in how the body works, as well as how to treat the body when it doesn't work. Okay, so we just can't throw the body out with the bathwater, so to speak. Okay, the body does serve a purpose. It gives form to our formlessness, and it's there for a reason, mainly to teach us about how do we see ourselves, to show us where do we need to grow in our understanding, and to help us remember who we have always been. So, still, and here's the exciting part, what makes a difference in our lives is that when we begin to remember ourselves as a soul and we begin to live as a soul, it's that we no longer choose to live in fear of everyday life, let alone we're not going to have any fear in the dying process because we are eternal. And again, fear is an illusion. We want to make it real, because it just really grips us, but fear is an illusion. The acronym, false evidence appearing real. Fear. Fear is an illusion because we can walk each day and interact with each other knowing that there is more to this life than what our five senses can identify. Because what we can see and hear and touch and taste and smell is very beautiful and good. It's also very temporary. And anything that's temporary is illusion because it doesn't capture the things that are eternal. So the things that we cannot see and we cannot hear and we cannot touch or taste and smell, those are the things that are eternal. Okay. And many philosophers down through the ages have pointed out this, have just pointed out this, okay, in one form or another. But as we begin this process of a higher dimension relationship with God and we move towards remembering who we are and have always been and embracing who we are, we're going to be reminded of all the negative psychological, emotional, and spiritual patterns within our relationships that keep us stuck in the past. And this is something we have to work through. Otherwise, we're just going to be spinning our wheels. It's a daily surrender or saying yes to being led by our soul's desires that connect us with God and the universe. And we let go of the former things in order to take on something that's more life-giving. We let go more easily because we're no longer controlled by that fear, but compelled out of everlasting life and grace. We no longer wish to find peace and grace and love, but rather, when we embrace ourselves as soul, and that really takes root, we become peace and grace and love. And that is a very powerful and transformative vibe that we give off. The sense of beingness generates a very powerful positive energy field or a vibrant aura. And others can tell this even before we open our mouths. But still, we no longer have to worry about what we're going to say in any given situations. We can simply be. And we can rest in that. And when we can be, where's the fear? And when we find ourselves being fully present, not only with ourselves, but others, we will begin to experience God in the most unlikely places and through the most unlikely people, which is exactly where God has been found all along. And this is important if you've caught other episodes of these broadcasts that I've talked very highly about finding God in silence, where we always think that, you know, I don't hear from you, God. I hear nothing. Where are you? We think that's a bad thing. It's just a misunderstanding. But when we quiet ourselves, when we enter into that silence, not out of fear, but the fact of where are you in silence, God can be found there. So how do we know that we're going through a transformation into this higher consciousness? How do we know? Well, ironically, the first place we may notice this transformation is in how we tell our stories differently. And I've talked about this many times, you know, and how we tell, especially our traumatic stories, indicates a transformational healing in relationship that has occurred, you know, that certainly exceeds time and space. Because it's more than just recounting facts and dates and figures. Our stories carry with them elements of healing, grace, and hope for all of humanity. And if you recall, you know, previous broadcast, I've talked many times about how storytelling and listening to stories go hand in hand. Some people are just simply better storytellers than others. Yeah, some people stick to a well-rehearsed script, making sure every little detail is shared, and other people are kind of all over the place with their thoughts and leaving out important details and making up others. And then there are some people who have never shared the story of their lives with another person. In fact, some people have never been given the chance or permission to share stories that lie deep within them, underneath their emotional wounds and scars, hidden from the rest of the world. And when this occurs, helping people find their narrative empowers them also to find their healing. It's that powerful. And narrative therapy is a style of therapy that helps people become intuitive experts in their own lives and tell their stories in their own words. Okay. And, you know, there is an emphasis on how stories are told because people begin to see themselves apart from their problems. It's like, don't identify with your problems. Don't go into victimhood, but rather tell the story in, let's say, yes, there is a need for healing here, but, and there's always a but, there is a great opportunity to embrace on deeper levels who you truly are. And so you no longer live your lives as a victim or just merely a survivor. You're one who thrives. Not just a like, hey, great, I healed myself, but now you have a responsibility to go back and help somebody else. Help them find their voice. Help them find their hope. Help them tell their story that empowers not only, you know, their level of healing, but also giving others permission to find their voice and tell their stories. As you see, you might have done some pretty awful things in your life, but that doesn't make you an awful person. Okay? Do you understand that? I mean, this is the one thing I want you to take away from tonight's broadcast, you know, just because you've done some pretty awful things doesn't make you an awful person, because you're a person that came into this world with some pretty awesome gifts. You know, you're already equipped and graced with everything you need, but perhaps you haven't recognized and embraced your fullest potential. And therefore, you are a person with value, dignity, and worth. But there are times when you act in ignorance of it. See, a part of healing from our past not only involves telling our stories, but it also involves reclaiming our empowerment to rewrite our stories that are now life-empowering and affirming to others. Yeah, we don't achieve this empowerment from, stories that are embellished or some delusional view that nicely ties up stories in a bow. It's like, nah, that's not the case, because to place any untold or unspoken moments of a person's life into his or her current story is very powerful. One book I read a long time ago, The Other Side of Silence, the author Urvashi Bhutia noted that when she interviewed survivors of the India partition of 1947, she herself struggled with reaching beyond the stories into the silences that they hid. In fact, she questioned if there was some way in which history could ever or would ever make space for the small individual voice. And so she had to adjust her listening, not just to the words that were being shared, but also what's not being shared. And what part does silence play when a person tells their story of pain and woundedness? So, nevertheless, as we go through changes in our lives, we transition on many, many different levels. Okay. And so this isn't something to be feared, but it's something that we need to strive for. And the reason we can tell our stories differently is because much of the healing involves becoming aware of the former and negative perceptions and the negative self-talk that no longer serve us. So, in other words, we recognize how these cognitive schemas have been draining our energy, especially if we tell our stories from the past like the same old way, with the same old inflection, same old words, and so forth. Like nothing has changed. It just keeps galvanizing our experiences. Okay. But whenever we are healing and we begin to tell our stories differently from a more holistic, healthier place in us, we replace all that negative self-talk with more transformative and life-giving perspectives. And this, as I like to describe it, as a starburst of energy, heals all generations across time and space. And Henry Nouwen, he has a great quote about this. He goes, "You can tell your story from the place where it no longer dominates you. You can speak about it with a certain distance and see it as the way to your present freedom." So again, listen to how you tell your stories. What words do you use? Where do you pause? How do you use silence? And so forth. And the beauty of our stories is how they change over time, not in a sense of making it up as we go, like reminiscing about the good old days or a fish tale about the one that got away, but rather understanding how we tell our stories differently from a healthier place, a place of hope, a place of peace. And when we're able to do this, we no longer fear the liminal spaces in our lives, but we see them as opportunities to tap into the very best of ourselves. Well, I'm Dr. James Houck, and you've been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Thank you for spending this hour with me. And until we talk again in 2 weeks, everybody out there, behave yourself. Everybody, keep striving to discover yourself as that beautiful soul in which you are. And we will see who's moving on to the World Series. So, everybody, take care and good night.
For an answer, or just to leave a thousand comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV.